Penguin Random House Audio presents You've Been Chosen, Thriving Through the Unexpected. This is the author, Cint Marshall. To my mother, Carolyn Gardner, who showed me what it looks like to be chosen. Introduction. Your voice of power. It was the day before New Year's Eve. I had been puttering around our house all day, making sure everything was ready for my son Anthony's college friends, who would arrive later that afternoon for a traditional New Year's weekend of football games and black eyed peas. I wanted to make sure these kids felt welcome and was happy to see my Christmas decorations were still sparkling, filling every nook and cranny of our home with holiday cheer. My four kids like to tease me, and my husband Kenny likes to complain about my abundant, some might say overabundant, Christmas decorations. They think my holiday spirit is a little out of control, with stockings and trees and decorative pillows everywhere they look. And okay, I admit that 45 bins of Christmas stuff can really fill up a house. We're not quite Christmas with the cranks, but it's a lot. What can I say? I love Christmas, and I try to share that love. The holiday music played through the house as I moved around, competing for my attention along with the football game on TV and the member of my AT&T lobbying team on my work phone. As president of AT&T North Carolina, I'd already helped to set our major strategies to keep the company growing. But in these quiet days before the 2011 legislative session kicked in, I needed to review a few details. On the surface, it looked like a normal day in the Christmas season for the Marshalls. But below the surface, there was an uneasy vibe in the air. Something troubled my spirit as I went from room to room to room, making sure towels were out, the beds were made, and the politicians were on board with my plans. As I listened to my colleague on the other end of my cell phone, part of me was on high alert for the sound of our house phone ringing. I was impatient to talk to a man I'd met only 2 weeks before, but who had suddenly become one of the most important people in my life. Finally, he called. There was some chit-chat, and then Dr. Tyner said the words that still echo in my head today. "I'm looking at your pathology report now, Cynthia, and I have news. It's bad, and it's significant." There were a lot of other words that followed, about a malignant tumor and lymph nodes and the urgency of scheduling more appointments. From some distant place, I heard him tell me that without chemotherapy, I had at best a 25% chance of being here 5 years from now. I was having trouble taking it all in. I'd been waiting all day, all week really, for this call, but now I felt as if I were eavesdropping while Dr. Tyner talked to someone else, and I understood what people mean when they talk about out-of-body experiences. Clearly, all of those bad words were describing someone else's body, not mine. Someone else's life. I had this intense urge to hang up the phone and go back to my work call and pretend this conversation never happened. All week, I'd been pressing to talk to this man and hear his news. Now I wanted him to go away. I wanted to keep living the life I'd had when I was just handling my work. It was all I could do to hold on to the phone. When Dr. Tyner finally said goodbye, I simply stood there. Kenny was beside me, his arms around me, but I felt as if this were someone else's body, someone else's life, definitely someone else's tumor. There was only one thing to do. With shaking hands, I called my mother. I remember when she answered the phone that day. I had to strain to hear her traditional, "Hey, honey," just above a whisper. "How you doing?" My mother is typically very soft-spoken. I could barely hold it together as I told her about the pathology results and what Dr. Tyner told me. The word cancer might have been the hardest word I ever said, but my mother's voice didn't waver in her immediate response. "This is for his glory." Her voice grew louder as she responded to my news. She shifted from my normal, soft-spoken mama to the woman who stood in front of her church on Sundays and preached the word of the Lord as the Spirit worked in her. I could imagine her right hand balled into a fist and bumping up and down, the way it did when she was at the pulpit. This, I knew, was her voice of power. You see, my mother is a saint, an angel, and a prayer warrior, all rolled into one. She loves Jesus like no one else I've ever met. So I shouldn't have been surprised that this was where she went in the face of unwelcome news. But I hadn't known about this cancer for very long, and I wasn't ready to face something that might kill me, even if it was for God's glory. Right then, I wanted a pity party. I thought about hanging up the phone and calling someone who would be horrified and grief-stricken with me for a little while. But this was my mother, and I was raised to always honor my parents, and especially to listen to my mother when she got this tone. I held on to the phone and kept listening. My mother told me that she felt a message from the Lord drop into her spirit as soon as I said the word cancer. She said that because I had a high-profile job and because so many people knew me, my cancer journey would live itself out in the public eye, and people would benefit from watching my faith in action as I faced and beat it. There was no hesitation in her voice as she prophesied my eventual recovery despite the prognosis. Her words were coming straight from heaven. The more she talked, the more I felt my body stop shaking. I stopped crying. My mother wasn't crying, after all, so maybe I didn't need to either. "I should get ready for the Lord to work," she told me, "and call her back when I knew more about my next steps." She would fly from her home in California to help us in North Carolina. Her voice cracked only once, at the very end of the call, when she reminded me that all sickness is not unto death, which is something Jesus says in the Gospel of John. She finished by saying again, "This is for his glory." Her words were still ringing in my ears a week later, when I started to understand just how much my journey through cancer would unfold in the public eye. I wasn't a celebrity by any stretch, but by the time Dr. Tyner called, I'd been with AT&T for almost 30 years. I'd had 11 or 12 different jobs, each overseeing dozens, hundreds, or thousands of people. I'd been intentional about mentoring and building relationships, so I had a lot of friends within the company. Then, for the past 3 years, my new job as president of AT&T's state program had made me much more visible beyond our corporate office walls. Being the face and the voice of the company in North Carolina meant a lot of public appearances, community engagement, and interactions with local and regional media. At first, as my news trickled out, the calls came from friends and colleagues all over the country, offering their support and wanting to help. Then the North Carolina media picked up on the story. And the next thing I knew, my cancer was on the front page of the Raleigh newspaper and getting talked about on the evening news. Calls started coming from people I didn't know. That's the moment when I knew for sure that my mother's voice of power was right, as it always was. There was a reason that the Lord chose me to have this cancer, just as there was a reason for everything that happened in my life before it arrived. This was about to become a story much bigger than me. In the years since I found out I had cancer, plenty of people have asked me why I think I got sick in the first place. Why did this happen to me? Why does cancer happen to anyone? I actually love that question because it gives me a chance to share the story once again of my mother's prophetic words. My simple answer is that this happened to me because I was chosen. If you knew anything about me before you picked up this book, It's probably that I've
sample complete. Ready to continue?